Hello and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors and artists on books, movies, DVDs, collectibles, pretty much anything to do with the national pastime. If it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Any middle-aged, self-respecting New York baseball fan knows the name Phil Pepe. He was the Yankees beat writer for the World Telegram and Sun from 1961 to 64, and for the Daily News from 1971 to 74. He's enjoyed a long run on radio, too, serving as a sports voice for WCBS-FM when it was still an oldie station, as well as gigs on the YES Network. Not surprisingly, he's also been a staple of the baseball book world, having written or co-written dozens of books, beginning with From Ghetto to Glory, The Story of Bob Gibson, originally published in 1968. Pepe's other titles include 1961, Asterisk, Talkin' Baseball, An Oral History of Baseball in the 1970s, The Ballad of Billy and George, The Tempestuous Baseball Marriage of Billy Martin and George Steinbrenner, and The Wit and Wisdom of Yogi Berra, among many others. He's also been the man behind the former major leaguers who get top billing in the Few and Chosen series published by Triumph Books that highlight star players from several individual teams, including the Yankees, Mets, Cubs, Cardinals, Tigers, and Dodgers, plus the Negro Leagues. His latest assignment had him working with Bud Harrelson on his memoirs, Turning Two, My Journey to the Top of the World and Back with the New York Mets. In this day and age of tell-all tales, Turning Two is almost a throwback. There's no dishing the dirt, hardly even a mild cuss word. It's a gentle story, the likes of which were in vogue when I was a kid. I had the opportunity to speak with Pepe recently about his long and varied career.
Phil Pepe, welcome to the bookshelf.
Well, thanks for having me, Ron.
So, how does the process work with you as a collaborator? Who engages you? The author comes to you, or the publisher, or someone else?
Well, there are a variety of ways. I have initiated it. In the latest one, Bud Harrelson, that was something that was dropped into my lap, which rarely happens in the book publishing business, as you know. The reason being that my agent was having a conversation with an editor at Thomas Dunn, and the editor happened to mention that, you know, I'd really like to do a book with Bud Harrelson. He was always my hero. I always aspired to be his replacement as a shortstop for the Mets. He's never done a book. I would like to do it. Well, naturally, if you're an agent, you hear things like that, you get to work immediately. So Rob Wilson, who is the agent, called me and asked me if I knew Bud Harrelson. I said, yeah, sure I do. And he's been around New York for a long time. Even though I spent most of my time with the Yankees, I still covered some Mets games and ran into Bud very frequently on the banquet circuit or at various functions, and had a pretty good relationship with him. I guess because I didn't cover him, I never got a chance to antagonize him. So I called Bud and told him, and he's just a wonderful guy. I mean, I've always had a great feeling for him. And when I told him what I had in mind, he said he'd be interested. The one thing is, I'm not going to hurt anybody. I'm not going to dish any dirt. If you want to do that kind of a book, get somebody else. If you just want to do an upbeat, positive book, then I'm your man. So I agreed, and we had a meeting with the publisher, and it went from there.
Now, that's one thing I noticed in reading the book, is, as you say, there is no dirt. There is no negativity at all. He has wonderful things to say about his teammates. He has wonderful things to say about Gil Hodges, the manager of that 69 team. That's almost like a throwback these days.
Right. Well, he's a throwback guy. I mean, he comes from an era when people weren't writing the tell-all books that have become in vogue in recent years. And all the things that he said about those people was sincere. If he didn't like somebody, he just didn't say anything, you know, in the book. But he was sincere about Gil Hodges, obviously sincere about Tom Seaver because they were roommates for so long. And the people that he liked, he let it be known. But, you know, if he didn't like, if a guy's not mentioned, And you think should have been mentioned in that book? It's probably because he didn't want to talk about him.
So how does it work when you sit down, or do you sit down with the athlete? How does that work? Does he sit down and you interview him? Does he send you tapes of his memoirs that he just talks into a recorder? How does it work with you?
No, I prefer to use my tape recorder and ask them questions. And by doing that, you get an opportunity to capture not only the language but the flavor of their speech. If a guy, and I did a book with Mickey Mantle, so a lot of what his speech pattern is based on his background from Oklahoma and Texas. You try to maintain the flavor of that language, and also words that and phrases that are special to him or that he uses frequently. You try to do that. And by doing it, putting on a tape recorder, it's easy to just copy that. I mean, obviously the grammar has to be cleaned up and some of the language has to be cleaned up, but it gives you the opportunity to capture the flavor of his language.
Now, you've worked with big stars like Mantle. You've worked with Gary Carter. You've worked with Jim Cott. Does that make a difference in how you approach, you know, Harrelson? As beloved as he is, let's face it, he's not a superstar. Does that make a difference in the telling?
I don't understand. What do you mean?
Well, I guess not, because these are their stories. You're not writing about them. You're.
Oh, right. Oh, that's right. It's their story, and if a publisher is interested in doing a book with him, they must think he has something to offer, and they must think he's a big enough star. I mean, Bud Harrelson, you're right. He wasn't a superstar. But he was a very prominent and important player on a team that is still revered by not only Mets fans, but baseball fans, the 1969 Mets. He was a prominent guy. And then he had the obvious thing. He had the scuffle with Pete Rose. That was obviously going to be a prime subject. And even with that, I mean, he didn't knock Pete Rose. They became friends. They became teammates. He wasn't going to knock him. He tries to do it in sarcasm, in humor, where he will say something like, I tell kids at a banquet that I hit Pete with my best shot. I hit him in his fist with my eye. That's the kind of thing. But that's Bud. That's his impish attitude, his impish personality, and that's why he's such a delight to work with. And everybody, first of all, one thing that you have to understand is if I'm doing a book and I'm ghostwriting a book, and I've done many, many ghostwriting books, if I'm ghostwriting a book, I'm helping these people make money. So they are going to be cooperative with me. Even if they didn't start out liking me, they got to the point where, hey, this guy's putting money in my pocket, and also they have enough of an ego to want the book to be favorable to them.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the first collaboration you did was with Bob Gibson?
Yeah, probably that was the first one.
From,
yeah, I guess
from Ghetto to Glory. How was he to work with?
Well, that was an interesting thing. It turns out that he had been commissioned, or somebody else was supposed to write his book. I don't know if you're familiar with this story. There was a man by the name of John Lake who wrote for the Herald Tribune. Okay, I have a friend named Xander Hollander who do you know that name?
Yes, I do.
Okay, well, he was packaging books. He was my first boss in the newspaper business, and he was packaging books. And he put together a book with, here's another name, Marty Glickman was working as an agent for Bob Gibson. And he came to Xander one day and said, Bob wants to do a book. Do you think you can sell it? Yes, I can. He got together with John Lake. John Lake was supposed to write it. It was like 3 months before the manuscript was supposed to be delivered. No one could find John Lake. He was lost. He was gone. It turns out no one to this day knows what happened to him. I've been in touch with his son. They think he jumped off the George Washington Bridge or something.
Oh,
so the book was never delivered. So I get a call from my buddy Xander Holland. He says, I'm in a big jam. I need your help. I need you to do a rush job on this book. I said, well, what about all his notes? Missing, gone. Okay, so he puts me together with Bob Gibson, and, you know, I'm sure Gibson was a little bit put off by that time because he was going to have to go over all the material he had already spoken into a tape recorder. He's going to have to repeat it. And that's the way that came about. So was he easy to work for? No, certainly not. But under the conditions, I couldn't expect him to be easy to work with. But it did turn out fine, and he was happy with it. And he's a difficult man anyway. But we had formed a relationship, and I still am his friend. I don't know if I want to say friend, but his acquaintance. We see one another occasionally. And he's been fine since then. He became a coach with the Mets, and he was around, and his personality changed once he quit playing baseball.
How have your methods changed over the years? When you started working with him, did you sit down face-to-face with him?
Yes, always face-to-face.
Always face-to-face, even like now, like we're obviously recording this over the telephone, so we're not face-to-face. Do you still do everything face-to-face?
Occasionally, I have to, because of not my schedule, but because of the schedule of the people I'm dealing with, I sometimes have to do it by telephone, and I do it on a tape recorder. Mm-hmm. I tape them over the phone. But I always try to at least have one meeting face-to-face. I started a thing about 10 or 11 years ago when a publishing company by the name of Triumph Books, which does a lot of sports books, contacted me. I had done a couple of books for them. I did the Gary Carter book for them and the Jim Cott book for them. And they contacted me once and said they would like to do a book about the Yankees. Do I have any ideas? And I said, I'm fresh out of Yankee ideas for books, that there have been so many done. I said, but there was one thing that I've always thought would be fascinating and I would enjoy doing, and that is to get a former player and have him select his all-time team for that team that he played for. Five players at each position, and rate them and talk about why he chose them and what he knew about them, whatever anecdotes. So the first book was done with Whitey Ford, and he chose his all-time Yankees team. And Triumph decided to call it Few and Chosen. I don't even understand why, but that was their idea.
So I guess because there are only five players from each position.
I guess so, and they like those weird kind of titles. Well, that began a thing. That book was so successful that they asked me to do another one. Well, from that point, I did the St. Louis Cardinals with Tim McCarver. Then I did the Boston Red Sox with Johnny Pesky. Then I did I'm not sure of the order, but I have done the Giants with Bobby Thompson, the Dodgers with Duke Snyder, the Cubs with Ron Santo, we did one on the Negro Leagues with Monty Irvin.
And you did the one on the Mets with Rusty Staub.
Mets with Rusty Staub. I just completed one that just came out with on the Phillies with Gary Matthews. And it's been a joy to do these things. Most of these guys, I did the Tigers with Lance Parrish. Most of these guys I had a relationship with. Some of them I didn't even know. I knew of them, and they may have heard of me, but I didn't have a relationship with them, like Gary Matthews, Sarge. He's now become my buddy. It got to the point where he called me on New Year's Day to wish me a Happy New Year, and I never had any athlete ever do that before.
How much do the athletes participate in that series?
Their participation, it varies. I mean, some of them really take it seriously, and they want to be sure that they. Gary Matthews, who really didn't have a lot of knowledge about the background of the Phillies and old-time players, he apparently went to veteran writers and broadcasters in Philadelphia and got their input. He talked to Dallas Green and asked him, what do you think of so-and-so? How is this guy? How is Jim Constanti? What do you know about him? that kind of interested me that he would take such an initiative like that. Some guys would just, what I do in those situations is I research it and I give them a list of names. At third base, I might give them 17 names or 12 names, and I put next to it, I put their statistics only with the team that we're writing about, not their overall statistics. Right. And a lot of them look at those, and they make their selections. But I've nudged them a little bit. They never heard of a player. I said, Del Ennis, I told Gary Matthews, You ask about Dell Ennis. He belongs on this team. He says, who's Dell Ennis? I never heard of him. I said, well, ask the people in Philadelphia, and they'll tell you. And he got back to me. He says, you were right. Boy, they raved about Dell Ennis. And you know, that sort of thing is very rewarding. And it also helps them. And a guy like Matthews really accepted the fact that it broadened his knowledge of the game before he played it.
In addition to all these collaborations, of course, you've got a great number of books totally on your own. Do you have a preference? Do you prefer working on your own, or do you enjoy working with other people?
Well, I'm very understanding of the fact and cognizant of the fact that the best way to sell books is to do it with a big star. People are not going to come to buy a book if I write it. The best... And I also strongly believe that the best way to sell books is to do book signings at these various bookstores. And the best one I ever had was with Mickey Mantle, where we sold like 1,800 books when his book came out, simply because people came to get his autograph. Was it a great book? No, I'd be the first to admit it wasn't a great book, but it was thorough, and it was a gimmick. It was mainly about his Triple Crown season, and some biographical material, and it was okay, but it probably didn't deserve the recognition and the success it got. It reached number 7 on the New York Times bestseller list. The reason it did is because it's Mickey Mantle.
When you work with, you mentioned that Harrelson didn't want to dish any dirt, and obviously since Ball 4, and perhaps even a little bit before that, the tide has turned a little bit to, if anyone read Ball 4 nowadays, they would think, what's the big deal? What about you personally? Would you have trouble working with someone like say, Jose Canseco?
No, I wouldn't have trouble doing it. I don't prefer doing that. I don't want to be... my reputation has always been that I never rocked the boat, either with the Daily News or any of the books I've written. So I don't want to be the guy on a hot seat. I'm too old for that. But if I'm doing a book with a guy and he decides he wants to be... he wants to say these things, it's on him. You know, the onus is on him. It's not on me.
Would you ever say to someone, are you sure you want to say this?
I might. I might send, ask him, do you know how this is going to sound? I mean, I would do that just to be sure that he doesn't come back to me and say, hey, that's not what I wanted in the book. But also, I make it a point to send them the manuscript when it's completed and then have them go through it entirely. I don't know if they do, but they have the option of doing it. And if they see something they don't like, they can get back to me and say, look, I want to change this. I want to add this. I want to delete this. But I give them that option.
Well, isn't that one of those famous literary anecdotes about Willie Mays, Einstein, who wrote his biography, and Mays said that he never read it?
Yeah, something about it. I think there are a lot of stories like that. He was misquoted. The guys have been said that they were misquoted in their autobiography.
the title of Bud's book, was that, whose doing was that?
That's the, I can't be sure, but I think it was the editor, Rob Kirkpatrick.
Okay, because I was curious about My Journey to the Top of the World and Back. I was wondering what the back part was.
I'm not sure what that, but I don't understand publishers, and I don't understand why they choose the titles that they choose. I have suggested titles that have been rejected, but they have their own thing, and they seem to know what attracts, they think they know what attracts the reader. I guess it's because he came back to the team after he got fired as manager and came back. He's the only man to have been in uniform for both Mets World Championships, so that's the two. Turning two is a play on what the second base, the shortstop combination does.
Right.
I don't really know how this all came about, but it was acceptable to me. I thought they did a terrific job. I thought the cover is very attractive, and I'm pretty pleased with it, and I'm proud of it.
Great.
And Bud is too. Bud has been very good about it. He even has made, this is kind of humorous in a way, he said, I'm reading the book now, and I'm laughing out loud reading this. Those are things you already said, Bud. What makes you laugh at something you've already said? I guess he likes the way it was treated.
You've been doing this, obviously, for a long time. is it important to you to keep busy, or you just wait for the projects to come in, or you go
oh,
and
no,
search for them?
Yeah, I've been told I was told a long time ago that don't retire and don't wake up any morning and not have something to do. I just enjoy being involved. I love baseball. We are a baseball family. My son is a baseball agent. My grandson plays college baseball. I go to his games. My son and I co-coach a fall league team. I'm involved with high school kids. I used to do the games for the New Jersey Cardinals. I was the play-by-play broadcaster for the New Jersey Cardinals for 12 years. That's a Class A league in the New York Penn League. I just love the game, and I just love being involved in it in some way.
So what's next on your to-do list?
Oh, there's always something. I'm working on a book now with, again, Triumph Books is trying to do a series of books on baseball announcers, and they've done one with Pete Van Wieren from the Atlanta Braves, and I'm completing one with Howie Rose of the New York Mets. And we got a couple of other ideas. My agent is always coming up with an idea we're trying to push, but nothing is firm yet. So it'll be Howie Rose, definitely, because we have a contract, and after that, I don't know. But I'm going to try to do at least one a year from now on.
Very good, very good. We've been talking with Phil Pepe, who worked with Bud Harrelson on Harrelson's new memoir, Turning Two, My Journey to the Top of the World and Back with the New York Mets. Thank you very much, Phil.
You know, there's one thing I really want to say, and that is people talk about, I'm not a writer. I am a reporter. I always consider myself a reporter. There are people out there who are writers, quote unquote, and are much better than I am. And I have newspaper training, and my strength is in being a reporter, and that's what I aim to do.
But how does that translate then between the newspapers? Obviously, you're pumping it out every day with great deadlines, with tight deadlines. And when you work on a project like a book, it's much more expansive. So
that's
how does
the
that...
biggest, yes, that's the biggest adjustment, because when you write for a newspaper, the important thing is brevity. So you're condensing everything because you have a limited amount of space. Now I have to take an incident and expand on it. And that's difficult for me because my training for years has always been not to expand, to condense. And it's difficult, but I've gotten the hang of it. I know how to do that. I always have the fear that when a publisher asks for 100,000 words, I'm going to give them 50,000 words and I'm finished. I've run out. And it's almost happened a few times. But then you go back and you just add to the material you have. And I think that's a little bit difficult for me, but you know, it's part of the job.
And that was the Bookshelf Conversation with veteran writer Phil Pepe. Bud Harrelson will be among several Mets who will appear at the Hofstra University's 50th anniversary celebration of the team. It would be nice to see Pepe there as well, but he's so busy, you don't know if he can fit it into his schedule. And that'll wrap up another podcast edition of the Bookshelf. We're going to take a brief hiatus because I will be attending said Hofstra conference, so I will be reporting from there, hopefully find some interesting people to talk with, and put that up on the podcast next week. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, please send them to Ron at Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, and check in regularly for updates on news, reviews, and previews, and interviews, and anything else I can think of. Thanks, and so long, everybody.
Look out, Gabe. Here it comes.